Hope everybody is doing their best right now as we're going through this crazy time in our world. I'm Tony Bruschi, host of Real Ghost Stories Online. I wanted to invite you and let you know about our other brand new podcast that we just launched, Help Kill the Time for You. It's called The Dark Side of Wikipedia. It's about true crime and dark history. We dive into some of the strangest, most disturbed minds and experiences from our history and examine their story, their Wikipedia entry, and then discuss the cases, the individuals, and the psychology of the events as we go through each and every story. Some of our first episodes include Ed Gein, the BTK killer, the New London school explosion, Amityville murders, Richard Speck, Amelia Dyer, the General Slocum disaster, Jeffrey Dahmer, and more. New episodes every single week. Check out Dark Side of Wikipedia. Search it. Subscribe wherever you download podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and more. It's available now with new episodes every single week. Dark Side of Wikipedia. Search and subscribe today and stay safe out there. Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, it's not often you hear of someone being good with a nightly haunting. Lots that we hear about happening for one woman where night after night she is visited by the dead.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. You can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. If you want to support the program, keep us on the air, become an extra podcast person in EPP, you go to ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. $5 a month gets you access to all 300 some of our bonus episodes. You get advanced episodes of the show. You also get our ebook and our audiobook. That right there, a $30 value, Amazon bestsellers. You get them right there as part of your membership. So check it out at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hi.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
Here in the hills of Aspie Acres.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm on Aspie Acres, so I'm happy.
Well, that's what we like to refer to the land as that we live on. I think that's what we're going to call the farm from now on the air.
Yeah.
We've kind of decided that because you're actually kind of documenting our journey and the stuff that we're doing here on Instagram.
Yeah.
Would you like to expound upon that?
You did a good job. I am doing just that. I am documenting our experiences and trials and tribulations and positives and everything on Instagram as far as what happens on Aspie Acres. So if you want to follow along, we're at Aspie Acres and on Instagram.
Sure. So check that out. And you can follow that on Instagram. Yeah. Not Facebook. It's Instagram, right?
Yeah. And it's at Aspie Acres.
Okay. So check that out. Hit follow, and you can follow some of the behind-the-scenes stuff right over there. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to our first story. It says, back in the 90s, when I was in my 20s, my friend Mike and I rented an old house together. He was like a brother to me, and the house was big enough. We had enough room away from each other, but still have had community areas in the house. He moved in before me and was cleaning around the house before we moved in. There had been an old lady that lived there before us, and her family had put her in a nursing home, so the upkeep was not kept up before the house was sold to a neighbor and rented out. Mike had been cleaning the basement that first week and had been sweeping around and realizing that he did not have a dustpan. So he just left the pile of stuff and decided to come back the next day to take care of it. When he returned the next day, the pile was gone and everything in the basement was back to how it was before he started cleaning. Of course, he did not tell me this before I moved in. The layout of the house was when you walked into the back door of the house, you either go downstairs or walk up a couple of steps into the mudroom area. His bedroom was off this room in the back of the house. Walked through the mudroom was the kitchen and the dining room. He made this his living room. Then to the right was the stairway to the second level, my bedroom in the attic area and another bedroom. On the other side of the stairway was a living room, and this is the room I had my living room area. The back wall of my living room was the common wall to Mike's bedroom. After a few weeks of living there, one morning, Mike asked me if I was not able to sleep the night before. I told him to know that I had slept all night. He said he heard voices on the other side of his bedroom wall, which was my living room wall. He thought I had gotten up to watch TV. Weird things would happen when Mike was home. I never witnessed the disturbing things. He said my cat would stand at the base of the stairway looking up, hissing, hearing people arguing in the middle of the night in the kitchen in my living room, cabinet doors slamming, ceiling fans starting without being turned on. When I would crawl into the bed at night, I would feel someone sitting down in the corner of my bed. I looked up the first time thinking it was my cat, and it was not him. This happened almost nightly. In the mornings, I would get ready upstairs, and when I would come down and leave for work, I would get down to the main level landing, and the stairs would open, creak behind me like someone was following me. This happened almost daily. I never felt scared, but more of a soothing feeling. I spoke to a coworker at the time. He was religious, and talked to him how all the scary stuff would happen to Mike and not me. The only soothing thing would happen to me. He asked me if Mike was hiding anything, and I told him that I thought he was gay, but he had never come out to me. My coworker told me that since his secrets are probably that he had some sort of dark spirit that was following him, and why mine were soothing because I had guardian angels that were protecting me. From then on, whenever I would have a nightly visitor or follower in the morning, I would thank them for keeping me safe. Over the years in my 20s and 30s, I've had the same feelings of someone sitting on the edge of my bed, but not have had a visitor for a while now. I'm in a better place in my life and more secure now.
Do you think when somebody carries a secret like that, that makes them more prone to things following them? I'm not so much talking about the author, but more so the friend.
I don't know. I mean, if you're wanting to share something and you feel like you can't, I mean, it's nothing to do with someone being gay. That's fine. But it's more so holding a secret of some sort.
Right.
That you feel you can't share. It has nothing to do with, what that secret is.
Right.
I think we're coming down to when you feel repressed by something mm-hmm. or other people and you feel that you can't be who you are. Yeah, I think that could lead to negative things attaching themselves to you, because it's viewing you as they're not in as good of a place as they could be.
It makes me wonder when people do share a secret that they've been mm-hmm. carrying, no matter what the secret is,
sure.
why they feel so much lighter, physically lighter. Is it because it kind of takes that energy off? Mm-hmm. And is that energy what could attract darker things?
Could it? Here's an interesting thing. When you're holding on to something, I mean, because this will happen to people who are dealing with things that are that could be a positive secret. It could be something that is positive for them. And their life, but they have people around them that are not as accepting, which may be in this case, and they'd like to be able to share it. But does it happen or does it attract some sort of thing to you when it is a positive thing, but you still can't talk about it?
I don't know. Because I don't know if it's the nature of the secret or if it's mm-hmm. the energy of having a secret.
Just kind of what that makes you feel. Because
mm-hmm.
it makes you feel like, I wish I could share this. I wish I could say this, but I can't.
Because even when you have something good to share, mm-hmm. when you share it, you still feel that lightness and that relief.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just wondering in general of holding something back, period, if that can lead to any sort of attachment or something being interested in getting involved with you.
Sure.
You know, it's an odd thing to think about. I think probable the way that we've seen stories over the years of when someone is troubled by something, whether it be information or that they just can't share with the people they'd like to share something with. It leads to sometimes this.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that story with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to our next letter. It says, when I was a little over one, up until I turned 8, I honestly believed that I lived in a haunted home. The number of strange happenings, noises, and sightings that I remember still makes me feel uneasy to this day and wonder what or who was there. Since then, I've heard about the situation where when you get older, your mind starts to make up its own ideas on how something happened in the past and makes you believe the ideas is truth. On the other hand, with the experiences I've been going through continuing to this day, I believe that what happened to me in this house is about the absolute truth. The house was built in Naperville, Illinois. It was in a quiet suburb where I met some friends that I still talk to today. The house itself was a split-floor gray home. For all the occurrences, I'll just give you a few that really stand out to me. One of the very first stories that I remember in the house happened when I was 4 and had to do with a stuffed animal that I used to have. It was a stuffed Simba doll from The Lion King. I took it everywhere with me and therefore slept with it. I can remember when I would place it somewhere and then going to grab it again and it would be in a completely different place. I'd never see it move. For example, I'd place it on the floor next to me while I was playing with some toys, and then my mom would call me, so I would go grab it, but it was gone. I'd look and finally find it, but it was on top of the entertainment center, which is about 8 feet tall and about 16 feet wide. Obviously somewhere where I could not set it. While that is just a little story that would happen from time to time, one of the more terrifying situations is when I was sleeping. I remember waking up wondering where my stuffed animal was and noticed it was on the side of my bed, almost to the very edge. I went to grab it, and as soon as I moved, it fell to the foot of my bed with the back legs of Simba under the bed. So I looked down and saw it, went to grab it, and as soon as I went to pick it up, I realized that I could not, as if something was holding it and fighting me, pulling it back to the bed. After playing tug-of-war for about 5 seconds, I pulled my hand back to my chest, just staring and feeling confused. I saw the doll slowly get pulled under the bed. I was too scared to scream or even talk, so I quickly got back to bed, feeling like I had abandoned a friend as a sacrifice, and fell asleep, somehow crying. When I woke up the next morning, it was on top of my 7-drawer dresser, placed in a way where it looked like it was almost watching me. There were more situations where that happened with that doll, but nothing that I can remember was physical or harmful except for maybe one thing. When I was even younger than that, around 2, I ended up somehow crashing through the baby gate that was blocking the stairs and falling down them. My dad had been replacing the carpeting on them, and apparently there was a nail sticking up in my head, just so happened to catch that nail right above my right eye and just under the eyebrow. I still have a scar from where the doctors gave me stitches. I still have sight in my eye, in which the doctor said is a miracle. My mom says that our old English sheepdog named Shelby had pushed me down the stairs. This made sense, as the more stories I've heard about her, the more I come to understand she was an absolute nutcase that was hyper all the time. However, I still have to wonder if it was really Shelby who pushed me or if it was something else. And the only reason Shelby was blamed for it was that she was found licking the wound in a consoling way. And as my parents are both very rational about these things, they blame the blame got put on her. That rationally seemed to end, or at least they would believe me a bit more when I got a little older, about 5, and had an imaginary friend. When they asked me what his name was, I said Jack. My dad then said, "What did Jack look like?" I proceeded to perfectly describe my dad's dad, whose name was Jack, perfectly to him, who had died when my dad was in high school. He then got a picture of Jack and showed it to me and said, "Yeah, that's Jack. But how do you know Jack?" My dad just kind of looked at me very confused and worried, as if all that he had believed in was melting away, as neither one of them believed in ghosts, being Catholic and all. When Jack was around, I remember there being peace in the house, but sadly, that was only short-lived. I did not know why he left or where he went, but this newfound peace only lasted about 6 months to a year. After that happened, things really ramped up to the point of shadow people, my bed shaking, and even seeing foot imprints on the carpet leading to my parents' room, come and go as if they were walking towards their room. I remember hating my room and never wanting to sleep in there, to the point of me just sleeping on the floor outside of my door next to my parents' bed, since for some reason it made me feel much safer. While still in that house, my parents had my brother and sister. My brother, from what he and I can remember, had nothing ever happened to him. My sister was a little bit of a different story. This, however, included my mom as well. When she was incredibly young, she would have seizures while sleeping and sometimes even during the day. My mom would always take her to the hospital to try and figure out what was going on, but whenever they were there and they did their sleep test, she would never have any symptoms. This went on for a few years. Last time my sister and my mom were at the hospital, my mom was just at her end and did not know what else to do, so she stayed up all night and prayed. When it was 3 a.m., my mom said that there was a nurse that came in with a chart, put her hand on my sister's head and told my mom not to worry. She's healed. You can both go home, and then left. Wasting no time, my mom got her stuff and my sister together to leave as another nurse came in asking where she was going. My mom said that another nurse came in and said we're good to go because everything's fine. The nurse said that that's impossible since she was the only one on the floor that night. The nurse then asked what the name of the previous nurse was. My mom said that she did not have a name tag or anything on, so she did not know. The nurse then said that she literally just got the chart, coming to say that my sister was good since they did not find anything, so they were good to go, or they could continue to stay the night. Ever since that night, my sister had not had any seizures. I was told the story many years after it happened, but since then, my mom has completed her master's in teaching and is a third grade teacher at a Catholic school. She says that after that night, not only did it set her faith in stone, but it also took me a lot more. She also took me a lot more seriously about everything. Also, she said that she convinced my dad to move shortly after that. I personally do not know if whatever was in that house had any effect on my sister or if it was natural. I have other stories from that house, but those are ones that I'll vividly give you in detail. Luckily, when we moved out of that house, whatever was there seems to have stayed there. However, I still am the one who experiences these things to this day. One shorter, newer story that has happened that deserves to be talked about was back in 2011. I lost 12 family members and friends to suicides, drug overdoses, and car accidents in the span of 3 months. 9 of them came to me the exact night they died. The first two were my uncle and good friend the same night. When they came to me in the middle of the night, I was absolutely terrified, even though I recognized them. As soon as I saw them, all I could think about was my first home and thinking it has finally found me and has taken my uncle's and friend's image. I sadly did not have enough courage to say anything to them, but when I found out the following day they had passed away, I felt like they came to me to say goodbye and was all thinking, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. Well, I was able to, in my eyes, amend for this with the coming people. I decided to start saying goodbye to them, telling them how grateful I was to have them in my life. I remember the 7 other people smiling when I did that and just left, either by walking through the door or disappearing when I wiped my eyes or blinked. I just wish I could have said goodbye to the first two that came to me. I felt so strange going to all their funerals, not only because there were 12 of them, but also because I felt like I was cheating because I was the only one who got to say goodbye and was almost content. I'm still not sure how I feel about it. Thanks for listening to my ramblings. I'm sorry if this was long. I just really have never told everyone or everything about this in one sitting. Just felt good to get this all out in one at once. Then I could just... I just could not stop writing. Thanks for all you do. Never stop singing, Tony. It makes me crack up each time. There you go.
You know, I was thinking about her imaginary friend, Jack, being her grandfather. And it makes me wonder if he came in and protected them for a while. And then when he thought everything had calmed down, left. And then that's when things came back.
I think that's a possibility.
Like he was there just to, you know, to keep the peace, literally.
Mm-hmm.
I know. The other thought, you know, you could go down the path of, well, was it really him? Or was it something trying to gain trust by portraying him?
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, the way they felt that peacefulness and that light those months, I think it was more so that the grandfather came to try and protect the family.
What do you ever have a ghost that shows up to protect a family, to take care of a family? And they get so frustrated with their own kids or grandkids or whatever. They're like, fuck it. I'm not protecting you anymore.
Well,
I mean, just as we talk about the humanistic instinct of things and just kind of like the, like we put this superpower on visiting relatives sometimes of like, they're there no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like they're there to protect. They're there to keep me safe. What if they get there and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why are you treating your family? I mean, and I'm not saying that in this case by any means, because sure, this seemed fine. But I'm just saying generically in some other cases, what if they showed up and they're like, this is not who I raised you to be. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you talking to your children like this? Why are you talking to your spouse this way? What are you involved in? Fuck this. I'm done. I'm going to go help the fucking neighbors out. At least they were like, nice.
You know, they were alive people at once, and yeah, alive people would do something like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just so disappointed your next of kin or next of kin that you're there to protect, you're like, uh-uh.
I think most people have that I'm not going to give up on you attitude, but yeah, there's got to be some that are just like, this is too much.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think most people have them not going to give up on you attitude, but at some point I think there's just like the fuck it.
where it's
like, okay, I've lived my entire life now trying to help you. Now I'm dead and you're still not fixing this whatever the fuck up thing is.
Yeah, I could see like, that.
Fuck it.
Right.
Sorry. They look in the mirror and I noticed in the mirror every time I took a shower, it would look like my grandfather's handwriting on my dad's mirror. It said, fuck it.
I don't know that they would go that far, no, but they might just be like, yeah, I'm not going to be helpful here. I'm going to go try and use eternity to do something else.
That's what made me wonder, like, where it suddenly disappeared. Mm-hmm. We didn't know much more about what was going on in the house, but it's like, I wonder if ghosts ever do that. If they're just like, I'm good.
And I don't think that happened in this story. I think that it was very much the grandfather felt like things were good and then yeah, felt like it was safe to go back, but... Yeah. No, I could see the situation you're explaining happening.
It's kinda,
I would do that. I would. I'd be like, damn it, Libby. Okay. You're on your own with this one. I'm not going to help you with that shadow person anymore.
So. I've been here, been trying.
Yeah. If you're going to be friends with the shadow person that wants to harm you, fine.
You're using the Ouija board every night. Yeah, I mean, where it's like willful intent to,
yeah,
not like I don't know what to do, but like I'm drawing this shit up every day.
You can't be our kids and not know that you leave yeah, Ouija boards alone.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
exactly, that's where I wonder if that ever happens. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. At Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. We would love to hear it here on the program. Let's go to a caller. Let's do this one right here. 855-853-4802 is a number. Hi, let's hear your ghost story.
Hi, I'm Sadie from Kentucky. I've recently been listening to your podcast because of quarantine. I'm type 1 diabetic, and so I can't really go out and work or do things during this time. So I've been listening to the podcast while I watercolor, pardon me. I have several paranormal stories, but this one is about a famous house that I live near. It's Octagon Hall, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a Civil War era home that has 8 sides to it. And there's some theories around items or buildings having 8 sides and them having, like, an effect on the supernatural. I was in high school, and I had begged my mom as a birthday present to let me go on a novice hunt they were hosting. And I finally convinced her. It was an all-day thing, and then the hunt was from about 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. It's a really, really beautiful home. Some side history. It was used as a hospital for Confederate soldiers in the Civil War, so there were several deaths on the property, but also deaths in the family. One of the young daughters, Mary Elizabeth, died from an infection from a fireplace burn, and she's known to haunt the home and the land. There's also a dark 7-foot shadow figure that's seen as the little girl's protector and gets threatening whenever you try to provoke Mary Elizabeth. And then there's various soldiers that haunt the land. So here's my story. It was nearing dark, and there was suddenly this crazy heat lightning storm. It was the middle of September, and everyone at the event had to evacuate into the home, out from under the big metal tents that were set up in the yard of the home. So we were allowed to start the hunt early because of this storm. There was no rain, there was no thunder, nothing like that. So all the lights turned off for the hunt, and we were assigned rooms. Personally, not a lot happened for me when we were inside our assigned room. Then it was nearing 10 p.m., and I was recently diagnosed with type 1 and needed to take my 24-hour long-lasting insulin dose, something diabetics got to do at night. So me and my mom headed to the wooden porch that is situated on what's technically the second floor, but is considered the main floor. And the basement / first floor is underneath part of the porch. The owner of the home and his daughter were on the porch having a smoke while everything was going on. So we sat on a bench on the other side of them, and I took my insulin. When I was done, I looked all around the backyard and the field, just kind of seeing what was going on. And there was a summer kitchen right next to the porch a few feet away. And a summer kitchen is a small building used to cook during the summer so you don't heat up the entire house and make it hot. There was a wagon to the right of it. And behind the wagon was a security light or a street light that was automatically on during the dark portions of the night. And it lit up part of the yard. And I looked at the wagon, and I saw someone walking behind it. And I thought this was strange because between the wagon and the security light was tall grass with a tree, and the grass wasn't mowed like the rest of the yard. And I thought, why not walk around the wagon that's on the grass that's been mowed, and you don't trip on anything that's hiding in the tall grass. And the way the light was on this person, it completely shadowed their front of them. Not quite black, but not quite in color either. As he passed the wagon and came into the view next to the summer kitchen and cleared the tall grass, he didn't have lower portions of his legs. But I could see his thighs moving as he was walking. But he didn't have calves or feet. And I swung my head to look at my mom, who was sitting next to me, and I said, "Did you see that?" And she responded, "The guy walking behind the wagon," and I nodded, and she said, "He didn't have legs, though." And I nodded again. There was a group of people in the summer kitchen doing an EVP session, and suddenly we heard their voices amplify, and we ran down to see what was going on. And one guy said he had seen a guy come up to the window, which was facing the wagon, and peeked in, but the guy was solid black, and then like a switch, he was gone. And then me and my mom recounted what we had seen, and honestly, it was quite exciting. It was my first shadow person / ghost I'd ever seen. I was really excited about it. Anyways, that's my story. Love the podcast. Might call in some other time with some more stories. All right. Bye.
You had an octagon house in your hometown, didn't you?
I did.
You see them every now and then, and it's kind of like, I wonder what the rooms are shaped like inside. Are they like pie-shaped, or how do they do that?
Octagon. You know? It's all octagons. Everything in the house is an octagon, and your table has to be an octagon shape. It all kind of has to flow together in that.
Yeah.
No. That's not how that works.
Okay.
But I was curious as well about octagon houses. Like, what was the purpose?
Yeah.
Because it was a popular style of building houses in the 1850s.
Okay.
And so my wonder was, well, does it have something to do with battle? You know, because, you know, that way you can kind of you can see out all directions.
There wasn't any plans for battle in the 1850s.
I know, but my thought was, are you preparing it for one?
There wasn't any plans for battles in the 1850s.
Are you being a prepper?
Oh.
You know, is it like we're building this fort, like in kind of a home fort style,
uh-huh,
the same way people have been buying missile silos?
Uh-huh.
Like, there's no plans for a pandemic in 1998. There's no plans for a war.
Yeah.
In, you know, whatever. And people, you know, in their own way, they just kind of plan. But no, actually, it has nothing to do with any of that. It has everything to do because it was cheaper to build. It allowed for additional living space, received more natural light, was easier to heat, and remained cooler in the summer.
Well, there you go. It's an efficiency thing.
It's completely an efficiency thing. A circle will be the most efficient shape for a house, but very difficult to build.
Sure.
With wood. So the next closest thing you could do would be an octagon. So it was 100% about efficiency pre-electricity.
Okay.
So, but that does not answer your question about room shapes. I think on the inside, what you end up with are you try and build rooms as you would. They just end up, if it's an outdoor, outside facing room, you have a weird wall. It does say they're very weird to furnish. They're very difficult to floor plan out.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of overall flow of the house for heating and cooling, and you do get a little more space out of it, because essentially you got the square.
Yeah.
That you'd have otherwise, but the octagon gives you a little bit more. It's more adaptable that way. But I think over time people thought, well, this is a little difficult to deal with on the inside, and I think I'll take the rectangle and less efficiency versus that.
Okay.
So we were wondering the same thing. And it's funny because towards the end of that story, I was like, at the beginning of the story, there was a question I was going to ask. I'm like, what was it? What was it? What was it? Because it was getting
octagons.
Yeah, I was getting towards the end of the story. And this is how it always happens to me. Like, I generate these questions in my mind and I'm like, I'll remember that.
You need a notepad.
I do. I used to have one. I got to bring that back out here. And I can write my questions down as I go. But what I did do was I Googled Octagon House,
mm-hmm,
just to find out, in general, the story. And then you asked about Octagon House. I'm like, click, there we go. I already looked it up, and that was what I was going to bring up.
We're just on the same wavelength.
Yeah, so I know that we'll figure it out. So
my favorite thing is when you're looking for something and I'm in another room and I know what you're looking for before you even tell me, and I just holler where it's at.
We do that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Someone almost, I mean, is that empathic or is that just kind of us being Aspies side by side? And
It's sometimes... I think it's, well, I know it's empathic because of our empathic connection, but sometimes it almost borders lines on telepathic, just because it's like, I can tell that you are looking for something specific and I know what it is before you even say, and you're not obviously hunting for something. You're just kind of glancing around and I know what it is and I tell you where it's at.
Well, is it because our minds work in a very similar way as far as reacting to things? Like, you see something on TV, our minds go to this. You whatever it is, like, we're triggered in very similar ways.
Yeah.
And not necessarily how a lot of other people would be, mm-hmm, to do something. It's like when we see this, we immediately know, I want to find out this about that.
All we do when we watch movies is Google.
Wikipedia.
Everything.
All roads lead to Wikipedia.
Especially if it's a true story. Yeah. Then we want to know. And you know, I can't watch something if the timeline doesn't work out. So yeah. I know Outlander is a very popular, you know, TV show, mm-hmm, right now. It boggles my mind because it's like, I have to know the timeline and I have to figure out the years. Like I need to know how far into the storyline we are.
Mm-hmm.
I gave up on that on Walking Dead a long time ago.
I've almost given up completely on Walking Dead.
I know.
I'd like to get into it again. This last season, I had a really hard time getting into it, and then they stopped like without getting a season finale, and because they hadn't had it edited before COVID, so it like sat there on this like very average episode.
But I am gonna say our livestock guard dog that we're gonna get,
mm-hmm,
is gonna be named Negan.
That'd be great.
Negan's gonna protect the cattle.
Will he wear a leather jacket?
No, but he will probably have a spiked collar.
I thought you were going to say he was going to walk around with a spiked bat.
No,
that'll be interesting.
Well, he'll have a spiked collar because if he has to fight a coyote or something, it'll protect his neck.
Sure. We're going to get 22 emails now if that's a good idea or a bad idea. I have no idea. I've never had a dog with a spiked collar, so I don't know if that's... Is that a good move or is that a my dog's a badass? It looks good, but it could hurt the dog move.
Well, it's not spiked inwards. It's spiked outwards.
True. So, is yeah. There's really... I don't...
It's preventing whatever's biting in its neck, which...
To stop
animals it. Know that's yeah. a vulnerable point.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt the animal that's doing the biting of the neck.
So it's a protection.
Yes.
Okay.
It's to protect the dog.
Okay. It'd just be interesting to know what that is. So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. And EPP, sign up at ghostpodcast.com. Or patreon.com/realghoststories. $5 a month gets you access to all of the bonus material, bonus episodes, advanced episodes, and so much more. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Jenny, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.